This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2023 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us for Socialism 2024, which will be held in Chicago next Labor Day weekend, August 30th through September 2nd. It's never too early to make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
All right, so I'm going to talk about the long history of the Christian rights attack on abortion access and trans and LGBTQ rights, and why it's so important for us to recognize the agenda behind these attacks so that our movement for bodily autonomy can more effectively work together against this common enemy. Understanding the ideological goals of the religious right and how they see reproductive freedom and trans liberation as threatening to their hold on power will help us shape our own messaging and strategy. The attacks against abortion access and trans existence are part of the same playbook, undermining our right to self-determination while propping up a patriarchal system of white supremacy and Christian nationalism. 22 states now ban abortion or restrict the procedure earlier in pregnancy than the standard set by Roe v. Wade. And nearly 20 states have now restricted gender-affirming care, and they both often take the route of criminalizing doctors and professionals who provide that care, just as those who aid and abet abortion care are also being criminalized and targeted. So one question that can help us guide our strategy is, how will conservatives maintain their anti-abortion extremism when legal abortion is actually very popular? In state after state, when voters have had a say, abortion rights have trounced conservative proposals for abortion bans. Republicans are going to keep insisting that their 15-week nationwide abortion ban proposals are moderate, knowing that the majority of people support legal access to abortion, especially early in pregnancy. Anti-abortion advocates have so effectively advanced their agenda and moved the conversation to the right that they may be hoping to convince the country to accept a nationwide 15-week ban as a compromise. This would be a devastating compromise, and it could get very complicated because over 90% of abortions happen in the first trimester, and many people who support legal access to abortion are also somewhat uncomfortable with later-term abortions. So abortion advocates, we all have to work to educate the public about the importance of access to later term abortion care, and we have to be able to hold the line that there is nothing moderate about banning abortion, no matter the limit, and we have to fight for legal and free abortion at any point for any reason. Yeah. So who are these conservatives who are leading the fight against abortion and trans rights? And why have they been so successful despite their unpopular agenda? So one of the most effective and dangerous right-wing organizations behind many of these anti-trans and anti-abortion assaults is a group called the Alliance Defending Freedom. Boo. The Alliance Defending Freedom have laid the groundwork to defeat Roe for decades, and the anti-abortion movement in particular has been able to cohere around a shared mission and shared ideology. So despite their differences in strategy, their shared goal of ending legal abortion and upholding traditional gender norms has allowed them to present a united front and a coherent message. The legislative success of the Christian nationalist movement to restrict access to abortion and curtail trans and LGBTQ rights has been a long time coming. Right-wing forces have been gaining political power and influence over the last 50 years, building a network of legal advocacy groups, lobbying firms, think tanks, and academic and cultural institutions that together have been remarkably effective at advancing their conservative agenda. Under the guise of protecting religious liberty and family values, the Christian right has worked to undermine protections for LGBTQ people and chip away at access to abortion. So the Alliance Defending Freedom is a legal advocacy group. They were founded in 1994 by 30 leaders of the Christian right, including James Dobson, founder of Focus on the Family, and Bill Bright, founder of the Campus Crusade for Christ. Since its founding, ADF has expanded its operations abroad as it battles abortion access, LGBTQ equality, and what it considers the myth of the separation of church and state. So, designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, the ADF advocates for policies that will uphold traditional gender norms, eliminate queer and trans people from public life, and end all access to abortion. So the ADF works to develop religious liberty legislation and case law that will allow the denial of goods and services to LGBTQ people on the basis of religion. During Trump's presidency, the ADF became one of the most influential groups in forming the administration's attack on LGBTQ rights. Alan Sears, he was the head of the ADF until 2017. He co-wrote a very influential book that was first published in 2003, and it's still widely referenced, that's called The Homosexual Agenda, Exposing the Principal Threat to Religious Freedom Today, which claims that radical homosexual activists have the family and particularly innocent, vulnerable children in their sights. The ADF now has over 3,000 allied attorneys who have sworn to oppose marriage equality, abortion access, and deny gender identities, and this group has won 15 cases at the Supreme Court since 2011. The ADF has trained thousands of lawyers, many of whom have gone on to government service at the federal, state, and local levels. The organization also provides grants to other Christian right organizations and presses school districts to adopt its model policies on issues like transgender facility access. As the courts have ruled in favor of marriage equality over the past decade and our country has become more secular, the ADF has positioned itself at the very center of the efforts to curtail LGBTQ rights and have particularly focused on attacks on trans acceptance in public spaces, all under the guise of religious freedom. At the 2018 Evangelicals for Life conference, ADF Senior Counsel Denise Burke declared that lawmakers in Mississippi had introduced the nation's first ever 15-week abortion ban based on ADF's model legislation. This bill was designed to provoke a challenge from abortion rights groups that would make its way to the Supreme Court, which it did with the Dobbs case that overturned Roe in June of last year. We're basically kind of baiting them, saying, come on, fight us on turf that we've already set up and established, said Denise Burke at this conference. Once we get these first trimester limitations in place, we're gonna go for a complete ban on abortion, except to save the life of the mother. So this is what they're saying in 2018. The Alliance Defending Freedom has also brought the case challenging the FDA's approval of the abortion medication mifepristone. A federal appeals court ruled recently that mifepristone, one of two pills used in medication abortion, should not be prescribed past 7 weeks of pregnancy or prescribed via telemedicine. That case is being directly challenged by a parallel case brought by 12 Democratic-led states, which have sued the FDA to challenge federal restrictions imposed on the distribution of the abortion pill. So these are two conflicting cases. It's sure to lead to a Supreme Court hearing, possibly as early as this fall. And given the court's recent track record, providers are bracing for mifepristone to be less available in the future, which would be devastating as over 50% of abortions are now done through medication abortion. Another strategy that the ADF employs is pre-enforcement challenges or legal challenges to non-discrimination ordinances that protect LGBTQ people before a business is found in violation. So the 303 Creative versus Alanis case that was recently decided by the Supreme Court and which rolled back non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people was filed in Colorado in 2016 by the ADF. They claimed that Colorado's non-discrimination protections are unconstitutional because they infringe on a Christian web designer's freedom of speech and limitation. I'm sure you've all read about this. That Christian web designer had never actually designed a wedding website, but somehow had legal standing to bring this case. This expansion of the use of religious freedom to chip away at legal protections for minority groups is part of the Christian right's long-term agenda to impose their patriarchal religious values onto the rest of society. The Guardian recently reported that the ADF has seen a huge increase in its funding and has funneled some of that money to a slew of smaller anti-LGBTQ and anti-abortion groups. The ADF saw its revenue surge by more than $25 million, between 2020 and 2021, a period in which a right-wing obsession with transgender rights and sexual orientation saw almost 200 anti-LGBTQ bills introduced in states around the country. It has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to fringe organizations which have sought to diminish the rights of trans students in schools and the right for trans people to participate in sports. It has also donated money to groups involved in efforts to ban books which address LGBTQ topics and to organize and to organizations which seek to ban abortion. So that's the Alliance Defending Freedom. There's so much more we can say about them. I'd love to hear questions and people's responses in the talk back about the ADF and what we can do to oppose them. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the less covered strategies that the secular wing of the anti-trans and anti-abortion movements have been using to advance their agenda. So faux leftists provide cover for a largely religious and deeply conservative agenda to impose strict gender hierarchies on an ever-secularizing society and to control the bodies and the lives of those of us they deem incapable of making our own decisions. A very small minority of anti-abortion and anti-trans groups claim to be motivated by left politics, and these groups need to have their harmful and regressive ideas exposed. The TERF movement, which has been present in the UK for many years, is growing in the US. These are so-called radical feminists who purport to be motivated by feminism and fighting women's oppression when they advocate against gender-affirming care for minors, for bathroom bills that surveil and punish people, and pretend to be protecting women's sports by banning trans athletes from competing. Women's Liberation Front, co-founded by self-proclaimed radical feminist and environmentalist Lierre Keith, is one very prominent example. They claim to be an organization for women resisting patriarchy in all its insidious forms, and their work includes defending sex segregation of domestic violence shelters and prisons, defending sex segregation of women's sports, bathrooms, and locker rooms, supporting detransitioners in their struggle to be healed, and working to abolish prostitution and pornography as forms of violence against women. Anti-trans groups like Women's Liberation Front masquerading as radical feminist organizations need to be exposed for the harm that they cause. The anti-abortion group Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising call themselves leftists, atheists, progressive liberals, prison abolitionists, and pro-union. They've carved out a niche for themselves in the overwhelmingly religious conservative anti-abortion ecosystem to argue for the rights of the unborn using secular arguments and co-opting social justice language. They delight in causing confusion with their signs and slogans. Some of my favorites are end the abortion industrial complex, women's rights begin in the womb, telling women you won't be free without abortion is misogyny, and the preborn are us, we keep us safe. They regularly invade abortion clinics and try to convince patients in the waiting room not to follow through with their planned abortions, often getting arrested. A few of them were actually recently convicted of federal charges recently. And in Washington, D.C., and that was for a clinic invasion that they did in 2020. Their pseudo-progressive politics attract a lot of media attention and allow anti-abortion leaders to use them as an example to show that not everyone in the pro-life movement is motivated by conservative religious ideology, when we know that is the majority of people in the pro-life movement. PAAU draws on the tactics of the early pro-life movement, which were directly inspired by the civil rights movement. So they use civil disobedience and direct action in an attempt to shut down clinics and physically stop people from getting abortion care. And I wrote a little bit about the PAAU their co-optation of civil disobedience tactics and social justice rhetoric in the next issue of Lux magazine. So that's coming out in the fall. So our own movements for abortion access and trans liberation, while often very creative and confrontational, have been largely reactive and defensive. Can we go on the offensive and have a longer term, more comprehensive strategy incorporating direct action tactics in a more meaningful way and use sharper messaging for our demands that more clearly link abortion access and trans liberation? That's a big question. Another argument that I see utilized by religious right opponents is the framework of human rights discourse and moral outrage. Both the left and the right use language of human rights, possibly muddying its effectiveness as a helpful framework in our fight for self-determination. The anti-abortion right often cites the human rights of the unborn and arguments for fetal personhood to claim that fetuses and embryos deserve to have the same legal protections as any other citizen. Anti-trans advocates also argue for the human rights and protection of children against what they cast as predatory woke parents, teachers, and doctors who are forcing harmful gender transition procedures on innocent children. So we need to challenge all attempts by the religious right to use this moral language that grants more agency and rights to fetuses than pregnant people, and resist letting this language dictate the terms of the debate. Arguing for a more expansive vision of what reproductive rights and human rights should entail will give us the power to move the mainstream conversation from one that's about rights, which are easy to limit and co-opt, to one that's about justice, self-determination, and collective liberation. So as Maura Donegan said in a recent article in The Guardian, both abortion bans and transition care bans further the same goal, to transform the social category of gender into an enforceable legal status linked to the sexed body at birth, and to prescribe a narrow and claustrophobic view of what that gender status must mean. I do want to talk briefly about a handful of somewhat positive developments that we're seeing to defend abortion and trans healthcare. So in September of last year, the Chicago City Council passed the Bodily Autonomy Ordinance that ensures that no city department or agency will participate in any investigation or proceeding related to reproductive and gender-affirming care by anti-abortion states. That's a good thing. Following the end of Roe, 10 states have also passed shield laws to protect patients and healthcare providers who offer abortion via telemedicine or abortion to patients who are traveling to their state from states that have abortion bans. But we should also keep in mind that these shield laws and executive orders are pretty untested, and they're likely to be challenged in the years to come. So it's hard to really count on those as a long-term strategy. The movement for abortion access is stretched very thin right now, but we need to be very proactive and to anticipate the next attack from the anti-abortion right. They have made it very clear that they're working towards a nationwide abortion ban, towards increased surveillance and criminalization of patients and providers, and some are moving to restrict access to contraception. They're doing everything possible to get the abortion pill taken off the market, or at least to heavily restrict its use. Many abortion funds right now are cash-strapped after the initial outpouring of donations last summer, and the need has only increased. As important as abortion funds are, we all should be donating to abortion funds if we have the ability to. We cannot rely on crowdfunding our abortions forever. We need to push states to fund abortion providers and abortion support networks, which California and New York have recently done. They're not perfect, but they have donated. They have put aside some money for abortion providers. We need to expand insurance coverage of abortion. We need to be integrating abortion and gender-affirming care into primary care. And of course, the most important fight is we need all health care, including abortion and gender-affirming care, to be completely free and completely accessible. That's a big fight, but that's what we're going to do. So our lack of resources and the many fronts that we need to fight on mean that while we're supporting direct service providers and funding abortions for the many people who need them, we also have to be focused on long-term strategic planning to effect big change. If we're going to defeat the Christian right, we need to expose their endgame of entrenching white Christian patriarchy and fight for the most expansive vision of reproductive justice, prioritizing our ability to control our bodies and our lives. The recent waves of attacks on bodily autonomy can be seen as part of the long backlash to the gains made by the women's and gay liberation movements. So our big task is to learn from these earlier radical movements and to cohere our own version of a fighting movement for self-determination, healthcare as a right, social support for families, and racial and economic justice. And I'll just end with a couple of questions that we can get into in the discussion. I really want to know, like, what initiatives and actions can support these combined movements on the ground? And I really would love to hear what direct action campaigns or legislative initiatives are happening in your city that you see as useful in connecting all of these demands. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Dr. Bowman?
Hey, everybody. So if you didn't realize it yet, we're talking about the right. And I don't know how many of you were in the plenary last night, but I was really moved by how those brilliant people brought the sense of humility that they made their work and people should take their work and continue it and, you know, argue with it and broaden it. And so I'm offering what I've written as something that you can take and broaden. So on August 23rd, at the first debate of the U.S. Republican presidential primary candidates, multimillionaire Vivek Ramaswamy called for the abolition of the Department of Education. His argument hinged on how education starts in the home, and he closed by saying the nuclear family is the greatest form of government known to mankind. His glorification of the nuclear family is representative of the value set held by most on the far right, the idea that heterosexual cisgender couples with children are the beating heart of a free and prosperous nation. Underneath that belief, we see its ideological roots deep in the gender binary. The gender binary is a white supremacist invention born from men in power in the division of labor and care work in primitive Western Europe. I know, Oliver, it sucks. Male paternity became the absolute determinant of heritable wealth and property as class society was developing. Men in power sought exclusive right to their power, and women were excluded from participation in power structures. Domestic labor and care work were feminized and devalued. The gender binary was one aspect of the cultural devastation wrought by colonization. Prior to colonization, indigenous cultures the world over had more than two genders, with trans and non-binary individuals often holding positions of leadership. Expansive non-binary gender expression and reproductive autonomy through contraception and abortion are ancient, sacred practices, and their repression has long been a tool of white supremacy. The Marxist feminist theory of social reproduction is also key to understanding the utility of the gender binary to racist class society. As socialists, we know that all wealth is the product of workers' waged labor. Social reproduction theory further identifies capitalism's dependence on unwaged domestic labor, usually performed by marginalized genders and femmes. Without social reproductive labor, meals, laundry, housework, childcare, emotional labor, and the physical reproduction of humans with our bodies, workplaces could not function and capitalism would fail. When Ramaswamy hails the nuclear family as the greatest form of governance, he is saying that the oppressive binary gender roles necessary to maintain the nuclear family are where oppressive government policies begin. Binary gender contributes to the creation and maintenance of a lower class of marginalized genders. Cis and trans women, other trans people, non-binary and gender non-conforming folks who can then be more easily dehumanized and exploited. This is our starting point. The gender binary and its oppressive function. Colluding with white supremacy, colonization, and capitalism, we find the gender binary and ideology behind attacks on abortion, the criminalization of pregnancy outcomes, the mass incarceration of black and brown people, the separation of families at the border, the criminalization of trans existence. Anything outside its narrow stricture is threatening to it and thus will be a target of the right. The right uses fear as a political tool to build support for their policies and to encourage the consumption of their media. The fear of fetal personhood, the fear of black fetal genocide, the fear of women abandoning the nuclear family, the fear of a queer culture that rejects the nuclear family, the fear of queer and trans adults indoctrinating children, the fear of trans women sexually assaulting cisgender women in public bathrooms. Some of these fears are wholly and irrefutably unfounded. Trans women as a group do not assault cis women in bathrooms and locker rooms. Children are not being indoctrinated by queers in their classrooms and libraries. And fetal personhood is an unscientific idea which undergirds arguments of black genocide by abortion. But some of their fears may be legitimate, because destroying the nuclear family through sexual liberation and queer relationship anarchy sounds pretty great. Abortion has a special place in the movement against the right, as Clinic Defense has been in an active confrontation with anti-abortion activists on a weekly basis for many years in many places. Even though anti-abortion activists represent a minority, their money and Christo-fascist networks have built a highly successful movement, as Anne was saying. The right had been chipping away at abortion access for years before Roe was overturned. Now, in a post-Roe era, 15 states have banned abortion completely, while 7 other states have partial bans. The right's attack on abortion is an attempt to criminalize abortion and all who participate it, providers and patients. The attacks on trans existence also seek to criminalize individuals involved in the support and survival of trans people. Through criminalization, the right utilizes the police and the state to enforce their patriarchal, white supremacist family values. The criminalization of pregnancy and its outcomes extends beyond abortion, adversely impacting Black folks, Indigenous folks, people of color, and the working class. Anti-abortion laws recognizing fetal personhood are being used to prosecute pregnant or postpartum patients with a history of substance use. In the past few years, hundreds of people suspected of using drugs while pregnant have been prosecuted, with many serving jail time and being denied contact with their children even after they deliver healthy babies. In Alabama, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and South Carolina, law enforcement have expanded their use of child abuse and neglect laws to police the conduct of pregnant people under this concept of fetal personhood. The right has embraced the project of fetal personhood with the aim of giving embryos and fetuses the same rights and legal protections as a fully formed living person. The idea of fetal personhood is a religious one, not a scientific one. Arguments about fetal personhood are used to justify abortion bans at conception and minimize the agency and humanity of pregnant people. Additionally, fetal personhood valorizes male fertilization as the defining moment of human creation, thus marginalizing gestation, birth, and parenting. In a troubling example, Jose Oliva, former Florida House Speaker and current senior advisor to Ron DeSantis, has described pregnant people as host bodies when arguing in favor of the personhood of fetuses. The criminalization of abortion and trans existence is a mass incarceration event, and mass incarceration is a reproductive justice issue. The United States has one of the most incarcerated populations in the world. Jails and prisons, by definition, restrict bodily autonomy and one's ability to make decisions regarding their life and future, especially reproductive and parenting decisions. Mass incarceration is another tool of white supremacy and capitalism, which is impacted by the gender binary, as it disrupts caregiving structures, and the people who are criminalized are held responsible for the destruction incarceration inflicts on their families. Thus far, in 2023, 79 anti-trans bills have passed in the U.S. of the 562 which have been introduced. In May, the Republican governor of Nebraska signed a law that bans abortion after 12 weeks of pregnancy and restricts gender-affirming care for people under 19. Dobbs versus Jackson, the case that overturned Roe, has now been used as justification by judges in 2 states to uphold gender-affirming care bans. The right argues that gender-affirming care harms young people, while medical experts, professional organizations, and the research all agree that honoring someone's preferred name and pronouns and providing access to gender-affirming hormones improve mental health outcomes for both young people and adults. Gender-affirming hormone therapy has an extremely low regret rate, ranging from 0.1% to 1%, depending on the study. Other surgeries, like knee replacement and gastric Lap-Band, have regret rates in the double digits, yet the right is not second-guessing the decision-making of those patients. The criminalization of this healthcare targets not just the potential patient, but also the providers. As gender-affirming care has become more widely recognized and accessible, care providers have started facing more legal issues, increased bigotry and slander, as well as violence, harassment, and threats. If these problems sound familiar, that's because abortion providers have faced all this and worse since 1973. Threatening and perpetuating violence against providers discourages patients from accessing care and discourages providers from offering targeted services. To date, anti-abortion domestic terrorism has killed 11 people, injured 12, and kidnapped 2. March 10th was federally recognized as National Abortion Provider Appreciation Day, commemorating the day that Dr. Gunn was assassinated in 1993. Since his murder, 3 other abortion doctors have been assassinated by right-wing extremists in the United States. Religious protesters outside of abortion clinics are exceedingly commonplace as they attempt to shame and deter patients from accessing services. Crisis pregnancy centers are fake clinics run by right-wing anti-abortion organizations, which exist to trick and coerce pregnant people away from abortion. Recently, fake gender clinics have been opened to use the same tactics to prey on vulnerable folks seeking gender affirmation. In Illinois last year, gender development program workers at Lurie Children's Hospital were slandered by the far-right Republican gubernatorial candidate, Darren Bailey. When a Boston Children's Hospital was similarly threatened by trolls on TikTok, they received a number of threats, including a fake bomb threat, which sent the hospital into lockdown. While post-Roe, we have seen a myriad of mutual aid efforts to support individuals seeking abortions, there are far fewer community projects focused on defending access to care for trans people. There are small local efforts like the Hormone Access Project out of Western Massachusetts, or the Milwaukee Queer and Trans Depot Shot Clinic in Wisconsin. But these organizations represent the trans community supporting itself through peer service provision, not individuals outside the community acting in solidarity, like the millions of dollars raised for abortion funds last summer. Gorgeous defenses of drag story hours across the country have demonstrated that the community to protect trans care seekers exists and can be mobilized. The movement for trans liberation can learn so much from how abortion activists have fought against the right for the last 50 years. We can create ongoing solidarity funds to pay for medications, appointments, and procedures, as well as travel to states and countries where care is more accessible. We can form clinic defense leagues that protect the entrances to gender-affirming care hubs, like the children's hospitals, which have been targeted by bigots. The right recognizes that our movements have common cause. I'm going to say that again. The right recognizes that our movements have common cause, but we have yet to unify our fight against a common enemy. Sister Song defines reproductive justice as, quote, the human right to maintain personal bodily autonomy, have children, not have children, and parent the children we have in safe and sustainable communities. Bodily autonomy includes gender self-determination, as well as our ability to access the care necessary to keep ourselves safe and well. We must bring together our movements to strengthen our ability to fight the right. Abortion and gender-affirming care are healthcare resources that everyone should have access to. As Anne was saying, we must demand increased access by making healthcare free for all and integrating abortion care and gender-affirming care into primary care facilities. We need more providers and better training for providers so that all healthcare professional students receive training in full-scope reproductive and gender-affirming care. We must fight for gender-affirming care as a right for young people and adults, and fight against draconian laws that ban drag and deviant gender expression. We must fight for coverage of gender-affirming hormones and surgeries by Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurers. We must enable simpler, easier processes to change legal names and gender markers on all documents, such as security cards, birth certificates, and state-issued IDs. We need to fight against anti-trans bigotry in housing and employment discrimination. We must demand social services, including free childcare, high-quality free public education, and free healthy food programs to support working families with the resources necessary to nurture young children. We must decarcerate and release people from jails and prisons to neighborhoods with support services, free mental health care clinics, free housing, and non-punitive drug treatment programs. We must end abortion clinics' relationships with police and state and create community-based safety measures to defend our clinics. We must defund, disarm, and dismantle the police, abolishing that institution and the prison industrial complex. We must keep fighting for medication, abortion, and contraception to be made available without a prescription, and for all healthcare professionals to be able to provide abortion care within their scope of practice. We need to stand against any attempts to ban abortion, including later abortion, and return to the radical slogan, free abortion on demand without apology. We will not capitulate to spineless Democrats who allow abortion restrictions and bans as a compromise with the right. The same spineless Democrats who tout their rainbow allyship while trans people are murdered. We will defend abortion and gender-affirming care clinics fiercely and beat back the bigots at their doors. We will support the right of anyone to have an abortion at any time for any reason. The right is wealthy, well-organized, and winning many legislative battles. They have established a playbook of repeat strategies which undermine bodily autonomy and police gender expression. They believe their fight has been divinely appointed to them by God. In order to beat them, we must come together to build a mass movement and take power. Our movements have more in common than just our enemies. The tenets of what we are fighting for are interconnected. Transgender liberation is reproductive justice. Manifesting reproductive justice is impossible without achieving trans liberation. Ultimately, our collective freedom depends on liberation from every oppressive system and the creation of a new society built on human need, where abortion is everywhere and trans people are free.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.